I'm Laura Murphy-Oates, and this is The Full Story. With a record number of COVID-19 cases being recorded in New South Wales, the state's biggest hospitals are showing the strain, and modelling shows that the worst is yet to come.
The health system is world-class. New South Wales health system is probably the best health system in the world.
However, some believe that the state government has not recognised the severity of this issue.
All the information that is given to me from the doctors and nurses and our public health staff is that, yes, the system is coping.
With patients, nurses and doctors now speaking out about what they describe as a crisis unfolding inside hospitals.
You've got to understand that the hospital, individual hospitals from time to time will be under all sorts of stress, particularly if they're sitting right in the epicentre of the breakout, which is Western Sydney and Southwestern Sydney.
Today, inside the hospitals at breaking point. It's Thursday, the 2nd of September. So, Elias, if we wanted to understand how hospitals in the worst hit areas of the New South Wales outbreak are coping right now, where should we start?
One place would be Westmead Hospital.
Elias Visonte is a reporter at Guardian Australia.
It's in Western Sydney, which is one of the hotspots of COVID at the moment in Sydney's outbreak, and it's one of Sydney's biggest hospitals.
A COVID crisis zone outside Westmead Hospital's emergency department. At least a dozen ambulances, more arriving, all with infected patients waiting inside, paramedics outside.
So a few weeks ago, there were reports from Channel 7 of ambulances waiting to admit COVID patients through emergency.
Many on the floor for up to 5.5 hours.
Although Brad Hazzard, the health minister, didn't say that was unusual.
It happens in every system across the world. In urgent times, it also happens during flu seasons.
And then last week, myself and others in the media were forwarded this internal memo from Westmead Hospital. And that memo said the hospital was no longer operating in a business-as-usual environment and that they'd be heading into emergency operations.
What does that mean, emergency operations?
Essentially, the facility put a 24-hour pause on accepting any new coronavirus patients by ambulance. They were diverting ambos to other hospitals, for example, to Royal North Shore, which is over 30 minutes away from Westmead. They also transferred other critical care patients to other hospitals in Sydney, and they conducted an urgent review, basically, of how their hospital and their staff should operate going forward.
Right, so what happened after that?
Well, the next morning, on Wednesday, at a New South Wales COVID press conference.
The hospital system, though, we know that Westmead overnight has shifted into emergency operations mode. They've ceased taking ambulances for 24 hours. They need 100 extra beds.
Journalists confronted Gladys Berejiklian and Brad Hazzard with questions about whether hospitals were being overrun.
It doesn't sound like it's necessarily coping. It's saying it's not business as usual anymore. How do people feel confident that the health system is going to be able to stand up if we're seeing this? And
Brad Hazzard essentially continued with this line that the government's been saying for a while.
Thanks for that question. Look, there's no question that the health system is working under pressure.
Which is that everything's fine.
But I want to assure the community that we have been working, that is the health system, have been working on this since January, February last year.
And that, you know, he acknowledged there is extra strain, but said the hospital's coping and that there are plans in place to manage it.
But Westmead Hospital is typical of the sorts of pressures that you'd expect when you've got a major quaternary hospital sitting in the middle of the epicentre of the virus outbreak. I think it sits 3 or 4 kilometres from Granville, quite close to Merrylands and the other suburbs that we have been calling out in the last few days.
So the state health minister kind of says nothing to see here. How does this assessment line up with what you've been hearing as a reporter that's covering this?
Well, it's interesting because two images of hospitals in Sydney have begun to emerge here. One from the government, which says it's coping and managing under greater stress in the middle of a pandemic, and one from healthcare workers themselves, who say they're understaffed and are working in a really challenging environment. I've spoken to a number of nurses and doctors who've been raising the alarm because they're pretty frustrated at how the government's kind of portraying the situation in hospitals at the daily press conferences each day.
The hospital system is coping, but there are lots of pressures on individual hospitals from time to time. And I don't doubt that individual staff in some of those wards are finding that there's a lot of stress on them as a result of the number of patients coming in. But I stress again, we have a very, very good hospital system.
They've asked to remain anonymous because they're not allowed to speak out on behalf of the health system. One person who I can name is from the New South Wales Nurses and Midwives Association, which is the nurses' union. Their general secretary, Brett Holmes, said that in the Western Sydney Local Health District, which contains Westmead Hospital, as well as hospitals in the southwest, another hotspot of the outbreak, and the Nepean Blue Mountains area in the far west of the city, he said they're definitely under enormous pressure.
What kind of picture did he paint?
He said the system hasn't fallen over yet, but that members are just flat out. And he said there's very little capacity in emergency departments and ambulances are being diverted all over the city. And amid all the focus on ICU beds and hospital capacity, Brad Hazzard and the union have been at odds over this.
What I would say to the Nurses and Midwives Association is, instead of giving the negativity, how about you get out and back everybody and be a bit more positive, because I think that's not helpful.
On Tuesday, he said the union should stop airing concerns from nurses.
But I have noticed that one or two of the other unions are actually out being negative. That's not helpful.
A couple of hours later, the union hit back, basically saying Brad Hazzard needed to wake up to the crisis that's happening in hospitals.
So putting this unions versus government clash aside for a moment, what is it like inside hospitals for patients at the moment?
From a patient's perspective, it's a very different experience going in. I've been contacted by people who had kidney transplants and heart angioplasties booked in at public hospitals, including Westmead and Nepean. And they said they've had their operations cancelled and not rescheduled due to staffing shortages and COVID exposure within the hospital system.
Tell me about that. Why would surgeries be cancelled right now?
Essentially, to free up staff to deal with the outbreak, the state government decided to pause non-urgent elective surgeries across the state, and that came into effect last week. But what we've seen is that some of these surgeries were fairly urgent for some of these people. So one woman I spoke to, she's in her 30s, and she's asked to remain anonymous, but she told me that she had a kidney transplant at Westmead cancelled. She'd received a kidney at the hospital 7 years earlier, however, it had recently failed. And she'd actually arranged to receive a kidney from her mother in September. And they've been isolating every day to avoid COVID exposure in the lead up to the kidney donation. But then she said she was told in mid-August that the live organ transplant program was considered to be falling under this bracket and it couldn't go ahead.
You say that she considered this quite urgent. What has this meant for her and her health, having this cancelled?
Well, she said her life now involves regular testing, taking a cocktail of different medications every day, and she said she's hanging on for dear life. And this is kind of her life for the foreseeable future. The hospital hasn't rescheduled her operation, and she was told the unit doesn't expect to reopen until at least November.
So you said that her surgery was not an isolated case. Are there other examples where people have been waiting on pretty life-altering surgery and, you know, had that indefinitely delayed?
Another man in his 70s who got in touch said he was booked in for a heart angioplasty surgery, which essentially opens up clogged arteries. And that was booked in at Nepean Hospital in the middle of the month. But that operation, which he said was much needed, he said it was cancelled at the last minute, and that he still hasn't been told about when it might be rescheduled.
So that's the patients. What have healthcare workers been telling you about the sort of pressure that they're under?
So I think the common theme is that they're working with really reduced numbers each shift. And so I've been speaking to some nurses from two inner city hospitals, Royal Prince Alfred and St Vincent's Hospital. And look, they're really worried about the quality of care being compromised, especially in non-COVID intensive care units.
Okay, so what did these nurses in these two inner city hospitals say about these non-COVID ICUs?
So one of the things that's important to know is how intensive care units operate. They're different from wards where you either have multiple beds separated by curtains or you have people in rooms. Staffing has to be much higher in intensive care units. In an ideal world, the standard is that at least for a ventilated patient in ICU, there's a ratio of one nurse to one patient. And if their condition deteriorates, you can have even more nurses required for just one patient.
Right, so we have this very important workforce looking after people in critical conditions. How has COVID changed how they work?
Because COVID patients have to be kept separate from regular ICU patients, nursing teams are split. Nurses can't move between COVID and non-COVID ICUs, and COVID patients are typically spending longer in ICU. And so, for example, in an ICU, to make sure that a patient who's probably in not a super clear conscious state of mind, to make sure they don't fiddle with oxygen tubes or other machines helping them to breathe and eat, a nurse might be assigned to them purely to make sure that they don't tamper with anything and put themselves in danger. Also, nurses are reporting that because there just isn't enough staff to cover every ICU bed, and, you know, sometimes they're in charge of two or three beds a shift, they're reporting that they're so understaffed that increasing sedative dosage for some of those patients is kind of the safest way they can manage their load.
What do you mean by that? What does increasing sedative doses look like?
So most patients in ICU are connected to a lot of different tubes, and quite often that includes an infusion for some level of sedative. Doctors prescribe sedatives to a patient within a range, and nurses can determine how much dose to give them.
So nurses, because they're understaffed, are kind of choosing to opt for the higher end of that range of sedation so that they can keep across everything that's going on in the ICU.
Yeah, it was pretty confronting to hear that. But I should be clear, nurses aren't administering sedatives here that their patients haven't already been prescribed. And this also isn't the first time nurses have had to make these sort of decisions to keep their patients safe. Nursing levels have been a problem for a long time, well before the pandemic. But they're saying that they're having to make these decisions with sedatives more frequently now during the outbreak.
So not unheard of, but nonetheless, a pretty alarming situation in some ICUs in Sydney at the moment.
Yeah, and it was a very touchy topic when the nurses spoke to me. And I think it really goes to show the pressures of just how short-staffed they are. One of the nurses described the ICU environment at one of the hospitals as a hellhole in recent days. And, you know, they've worked in ICU for several years and they say it's the busiest they've ever seen it. They're receiving text messages every day saying they're 10, 15 people short going into a shift, pleading for people to take on overtime. And this is why Brett Holmes from the Nurses Union thinks the minister's portraying, you know, an overly confident picture to the media of the situation healthcare workers are facing.
Mr. Lucy, Alex, and I'll come back.
Minister Hazard, how many ICU nurses do we have in New South Wales? And we're hearing lots about, you know, so many members of staff being taken offline because they're becoming close contacts at hospitals. Do we need to source more?
Well, as Michelle just said...
As recently as Tuesday, he was asked about this, and he said that nurses are being trained up and filling the gaps.
We've seen quite a number of nurses both coming back into the profession, but also those in other parts of the hospital and being trained up to work in ICU. So,
and the New South Wales government has done everything they can, basically.
So it's a matter of having the expertise and also the equipment. And we've done everything we can here in New South Wales to make sure that's the case.
And we'll continue.
Look, I can't tell you that at the moment, but I'll try and find out for you, but I don't know the exact answer.
Have the hospitals kind of confirmed or denied or responded to these allegations about sedating patients in ICU?
So I sent these hospitals pretty comprehensive questions about what's happening at the moment. Neither of them really addressed the specifics around sedation and some of those decisions that nurses are having to make. But they emphasise that they're continuing to ensure patient safety and high quality of care. RPA did note that it's a very challenging environment. And at St Vincent's Hospital, they actually said their ICU is pretty well resourced at the moment, but that they're anticipating patient load will require critical care as the outbreak worsens.
Next, is the New South Wales government prepared for the peak? More broadly, what is the New South Wales government doing to relieve this pressure on ICU and to deal with the increase that I imagine is only going to get worse of pressure on this staff?
New South Wales Health Department has always maintained it has this base of 500 ICU beds. And at the beginning of the pandemic back in 2020, they put in place plans to be able to expand up to 2,000 beds across the state, and that each one of those beds would be able to be ventilated. The government is still ramping up that capacity. It hasn't got 2,000 beds ready just yet.
Mm.
We know that in recent days there were just under 900 beds ready across the state in both public and private hospitals because the government has basically brought them into the public system, and about 75% of those beds are occupied.
How many of them with COVID patients?
Well, last week it was just under 20% were COVID patients, but in recent days, COVID hospitalizations and admissions to ICU have only been increasing.
Okay, so do we know whether this will be enough, this expanded bed capacity?
It's tough to know at this stage whether that will be enough beds, but even if it is, the real concern I'm hearing is whether there's going to be enough staff, and skilled staff at that, to care for that many people.
What do we know about that?
From the nurses I've spoken to, they're really sceptical there's that many trained people in the healthcare system.
Mm.
And it was reported in the Saturday paper that National Cabinet had received advice that New South Wales doesn't have sufficient skilled staff to operate every bed in that expanded 2,000 capacity.
What's affecting the availability of this staff? I mean, how hard is it to upskill to thousands more staff members that would be needed to man these beds?
Staff in intensive care units are some of the most trained staff in an entire hospital.
Mm.
Nurses I've spoken to have said they needed months of training to enter an ICU, and that was before they even learned how to operate a lot of the equipment in there. And staff are also leaving for a few different reasons. There's a huge demand for skilled nursing staff in our vaccination clinics. A lot of them are going there, and they often get paid more doing that too. Others are retiring, and some are just quitting because it really is such a stressful place at the moment.
We've only really been talking about hospitals in Sydney so far, but we know some of the worst transmission is happening in places like Wilcannia in far west New South Wales, which is one of the hardest hit areas for COVID, you know, per capita at the moment. What's the plan for hospitals in regional areas of the state?
Regional hospitals are also set to be under a lot of pressure.
So, for example, Dubbo and Orange.
There's an outbreak now in Dubbo, and basically the plan is,
if patients really are in need of additional assistance through the ICUs, then it's still helpful to transfer them into one of the major metropolitan hospitals.
If lots of people get really sick and require ICU, you know, they'll have to be flown into Sydney for treatment.
There's a lot of work going on that area.
Elsewhere in the far west of the state, in Wilcannia, a majority Indigenous town which has the highest transmission rate in the country at the moment, my colleague Lorena Allam reported that that town has no ventilator and that COVID patients have been turned away from hospitals there and airlifted into other states for treatment.
Given everything you've told us so far, and knowing that New South Wales is about to ease some restrictions among vaccinated people, is it possible that this will all get worse?
Yeah, so on Monday?
Well, as I said yesterday and I've said previously, we anticipate that the worst month, the worst time for our intensive care pressure will be in October.
New South Wales Premier Gladys Berejiklian said that intensive care units would be stretched thinnest in October.
And the number of cases we have in intensive care then will depend on our vaccination rate and will also depend on the number of cases. And
we know that there's a bit of a lag between when cases pop up and when they go into hospital. And in the last week, we've had some of the biggest days of the outbreak so far, including going above 1,000 for the first time.
With that in mind, what can be done right now to fend off, a dire situation becoming even more dire?
So there are a few things that can be done. The New South Wales government has announced that it's going to be halving the number of international arrivals it takes, and it's doing that so it can move nurses and healthcare workers in the hotel quarantine system and redeploy them to hospitals. But no one thinks it's going to be pretty. No one thinks our hospitals are going to look like they normally do in the coming months. So I've spoken to the Vice President of the Australian Medical Association, Chris Moy. He thinks it's going to be an enormous task to find enough staff to care for people in those 2,000 ICU beds. And look, he thinks if by some chance we manage to find enough staff and bring them into the system, he's not really confident that hospitals will have much left to provide any care to patients who don't have COVID. And before we get to October, he told me we need to rethink how we run hospitals.
What do you mean by that?
So he paints a picture of a pretty dire state if we do reach 2,000 people in intensive care in the state. And he wants to see patients who require a lower level of care moved out of hospitals and back into their homes well in advance of that October peak. He thinks GPs should play a more active role in providing care to those people in their homes. And he wants to see a more holistic look at all the skills we have in the state. He wants some of those really skilled ICU nurses brought back from vaccination clinics to where they can really offer the most help in ICUs. He's really worried if we do hit that ICU capacity. He thinks it could be a catastrophe.
So, Elias, after that peak of cases that we're expecting to see in ICU in October, can we take some solace that a lot of people are getting vaccinated right now and hopefully that vaccination rate could reduce hospitalizations from there, that October will be the last peak that we'll see?
I think that's the big question. You know, in the COVID updates every day in recent weeks, they've been pretty gloomy. And the one source of light out of them has been hearing how residents in New South Wales are racing to get their vaccines. When we look at the number of people in ICU, the vast majority have had no vaccine doses. There's a handful who've had one dose. And in the rare occurrences where there's someone double vaccinated in ICU, they've either had their second dose pretty recently or they've got a pretty serious underlying condition. And I think health authorities are really banking on the fact that as vaccination rates increase, we're going to see less and less people who get COVID end up in intensive care.
That was Elias Vasante. Do check out his reporting on this issue. We've put some links to that on the Full Story page. This episode was produced by Ellen Leibeater, Jane Lee and Joe Koning, who also did the sound design. The executive producers of Full Story are Miles Martignoni, Gabrielle Jackson and myself, Laura Murphy-Oates. If you liked this episode, don't forget to leave a rating or a review. Okay, catch you tomorrow.